Hey guys, this is Chris Carr, and you are listening to the Earthling Entertainment Podcast.
Prepare yourself for Earthling Entertainment, the perfect blend of paranormal and pop culture, with your host, Joe Wakefield and Ryan Lang.
I love it. I'm a fan of this. I'm here for it.
Get ready for another brand new episode of Earthling Entertainment with your hosts, Joe and Ryan.
Hi, I'm Ryan, and I like to play patty cake with Bigfoot.
I like that one. So Ryan may sound a little nasally on today's episode, and that's not just because he's feeling under the weather. It's actually also because he's joining us via a dome where he has put all of his germs and sickness away
That's
from
right.
the others. It's called a car over
Yeah.
Zoom. Yeah.
Yep. Just, being a responsible person with a bug, it's been rough through my life up entirely yesterday. Oh my God.
Fair enough. Well, because you're under the weather, Ryan's joining us for the beginning of the show, the banter, and then he's going to hop back in at the end to say goodbye to everybody. But also included in today's show is an amazing interview by voice actress and voice coach Chris Carr. And that's going to be a lot of fun. And that's a big chunk of the middle. So you guys are in for actually a pretty special episode.
Oh, yeah.
If you are new to the show and you might be asking, well, what is it you guys do? Like, what is Earthling Entertainment all about? And you know what? I'm gonna tell him, Ryan. What we do here is pretty much an even split of the paranormal and pop culture. And we kind of layer it. We have our banter at the beginning, which is kind of a little bit more of the pop culture, a little thing called spooky stuff, which is cryptids, hauntings, myth, legends. Then we get to our pop culture section, which is called Earth Pop. Normally we have genre news and things like that, but today it's filled up completely with our awesome Chris Carr interview. Then after that, we have disclosure discussion. That one's all about aliens and a little bit of real world weird. And all of that comes together to a delicious, is it cake, slice of cake called Earthling Entertainment. I like
that's it. It is cake.
Yeah.
It
I
is
like,
cake.
Is it cake? Yeah. I like Mikey Day. I like silly, is it cake shows that on Netflix. Have you seen that? That's pretty good, actually.
No,
I'm not ashamed.
I've seen some of that. I saw this one clip. I don't know the talk show, but Johnny Knoxville comes on and the woman sits down in her chair on stage and she goes, "Bitch, is this cake?" And literally Johnny walks up and takes a big chunk out of like the armrest and it's totally cake. It takes a bite out of it.
That's
Oh my
fantastic.
God. I don't know what, but it was hilarious. Like, "Bitch, is this cake?"
Wow, man. So besides being terribly sick, how was your weekend? You get anything done? You do anything?
The main thing was went to the zoo.
Good,
That was
good with the
fun.
kids, I imagine. Or did you just go to the zoo yourself and leave the kids at home? You're like, you know what? Forget it, Timmy. I got things to do. I'm gonna go get Dippin' Dots and look at giraffes.
There'd be a whole lot less arguing in my day, that's for sure, if that happened. But no, I brought the kids, and so I have to tell you, macaque was going crazy.
Oh, the
Macaque was
macaques?
going, yeah, they are nuts. They are the craziest. Like, literally went for the animals, stayed for macaque.
You know what's
You know what I'm
funny?
saying?
I know you're making a joke, but also, I'm with you on this one. So, the Detroit
No.
Zoo, or did you go to the Toledo Zoo?
Detroit, and it's like a freaking like steal. And like, this is gonna sound like I'm plugging them. We're not getting paid for this, but
yeah, they're not
literally
a sponsor yet.
for family, for two adults, and you don't even have to name your plus one, and four kids, it's $149 a year.
I mean, that's good.
That pays for itself in two visits. So like,
right
no,
on.
that.
When I was living in LA, it was one stop on the subway to Universal Hollywood. And at the time, it was pretty reasonable too. It ended up being like 170 bucks or something for a year round pass, couple blackout dates. But when you were there locally, you could go in like December when there aren't tourists. And it was amazing. You just go from ride to ride. Loved it. So I'm with you on this zoo excursion.
Yeah. So I did that. That was pretty much the extent. This weekend coming up, we're gonna go to the Legacy Aquarium and Reptarium, And
The lake.
that
So
should be a lot
it's
of
pretty
fun.
much all about animals with your children visits.
They're a pretty big deal. And but no, this reptarium I've heard a lot about. I guess like it's really hands-on, like you can hold certain of the animals. There's a capybara just hanging out, I guess.
That's
So
pretty cool.
you get to pet a capybara. So I'm all about that.
You know, I once Googled what would be the best creature to reincarnate as. And I said very specific parameters. I was like, all right, given humans, what we like to do, and I don't want to be on the, you know, the bottom of the food chain. I don't want, you know, I need to eat something and do what humans kind of like to do. Because if you're reincarnated, and a capybara was the winner, they were like, there's not a lot of predators that go after adult capybara. You know, you pretty much sleep and swim and hang out on a beach. It's the life. So
Like,
I'm all
yeah,
for
they.
this. Can you imagine though, if you're the one capybara who is now at a petting zoo and have to deal with a bunch of kids? That's unfortunate.
I'm sure he gets fed well.
Oh, that's
But
true.
no, they say capybara, yeah, like, are like chill as F. Like, all other animals don't even care. Like, there are like pictures of capybara like riding alligators. Like, everybody is just like, they're cool.
I
They're
mean,
cool.
I think we need to
You
make a
want to know if
cartoon,
they're
man.
tasty. Like,
We need to all hear me out. We make an Earthling Entertainment cartoon. It is a capybara who is a paranormal investigator, but only in animal terms. So he's in the forest and other animal locations, solving animal ghosts and other animal situations. But it's the twist is he's a paranormal investigator. I'm just saying, that's our next pitch, man.
All right, it's not a bad one. We're gonna have to hatch that one out a little bit.
Yeah, we're gonna hire an animator. We can get this done. Find some
Yeah, I think
weird,
so.
weird kid who's a shut-in but just wants exposure. He's like, I know I could get famous. Just give me a script. And we're like, boy, do we have a script for you,
That's right.
Capybara Paranormal Guy, brought to you by Earthling
We're
Entertainment.
working on the name. We're working on the name.
Definitely not perfect. So Ryan, you may find this hard to believe, but I did my normal ritual of going to a movie this weekend. And
And how?
I know you're very surprised by this. I ended
Yeah.
up seeing Ready or Not 2, which I believe is Ready or Not, Here They Come. And I really did like it. I would have seen it last week, but because this is the second weekend, right? And it's not doing as well as I would have hoped for how good of a movie it is. But I ended
Oh.
up seeing it this weekend. And did you ever see the first film?
No, unfortunately, I don't know how it passed me right by. 'Cause like, yeah, I saw things about the second one and I was just like, I never even heard of it.
Well, fair enough. Definitely check out the first and second one. Well, all I'm going to say is they did a really good job in this film of building the mythology. You know how you get a Friday the 13th film and you don't really have to work too hard at it after you get Jason. He just shows up again and kills people and then that's it.
Yeah.
Well, this one had much more of a completed story. The first one had your setup where she is Samira Weaving is in a situation with a family. And I'm talking about the first film in 2019, where she marries into this rich family. This rich family turns out that they made a deal with the devil, and everyone who marries into the family has to play a game. You draw a card, and most of the time it's fine, but if you get hide and seek, it means the entire family has to kill you by dawn in order you're a sacrifice for Satan. And if they fail, everyone in the family dies. And that is the first film. Well, in the second
Thing.
movie, it's right up your alley. It's because it's a comedy and a horror, you know what I
Yeah.
mean? All right, so then the second movie, without giving anything away because it is new, they build upon that mythology pretty well. They up the ante to it's not just one family, it is a group of Illuminati type family, and now you gotta contend with all of them. Sarah Michelle Gellar is an a big kid. Excuse me, as a new add-on, and so is Elijah Wood. And both of them played
Cool.
really, really good parts. The cool thing is they didn't repeat themselves the way they did in the first one. It wasn't just a we're all gonna hunt you down. There was a little bit more twists and turns. You definitely need to see in theaters, man. And you know what? We actually have a theater who's a friend of the show, and we're gonna let them talk to you real quick right now.
Don't just see the movies, experience the movies in IMAX at the MJR Troy and MJR Southgate Cinemas. See the movies like never before in stunning 4K laser IMAX projection on a massive screen. Feel the movies with heart-pounding IMAX precision sound and experience true movie-going bliss in our fully powered luxury recliner seats. Get your IMAX tickets at MJRtheaters.com for the world's most immersive film experience. Now featured at the MJR Troy and Southgate Cinemas.
So, as always, go to the movies.
Go to the movies.
go to the movies. All right, guys. Well, I think at this time we are going to say goodbye to Ryan. We're going to let him get some rest, but don't worry, I'm going to call and bug him so he could finish off the show and say goodbye to everybody. But for now,
See you, Ryan.
bye.
well, now that Ryan's gone, we're going to start this week's spooky stuff. And since we got this great interview with Chris Carr, who is a voice actress, she did a lot of anime stuff and, you know, all the kind of spooky stuff that goes along with those outlandishly fun shows. And I thought, hey, how do we kind of tie the whole episode together? So in order to do that, we were thinking that we would cover a spooky stuff from Japan, and we got a disclosure discussion from Japan to kind of go with the whole anime theme. You know what I mean? I thought it was a good idea. So please sit back, relax, and enjoy this week's
Spooky Stuff.
Today on Spooky Stuff, we're going to talk about the creature from Japanese folklore known as the Nakamata. The Nakamata might be one of the creepiest monsters in Japanese mythology because it doesn't start out as a monster. No! In fact, it starts out as a normal house cat. That's right. So if you own a cat, this story might be a little concerning to you. Just saying. According to Japanese folklore, when a cat gets like very old, it starts to be, you know, it starts to change like everyone does. Some people lose their teeth, some people lose their hair. Apparently, Nakamata, its tail splits into two, it begins to walk on its back legs, it can speak a human language, and eventually becomes a yokai, which is basically a spirit or demon in Japanese culture. And that creature is called a Nakamata. There's actually two types of Nakamata. One lives deep in the mountains and is more like a wild demon beast, which, you know, sounds pretty cool. Maybe we'll cover that one on a different time. But the other one is much scarier, in our opinion, because that one used to be a pet. Not just any pet, your pet. In many old stories, cats that were mistreated, ignored, or lived a very long time could transform into a Nakamata. And once they transform, they often become vengeful. You know, as one does, I'm just saying. Some legends say they could raise the dead and control dead bodies like puppets. So imagine like a two-tailed demon cat sitting in your room while corpses dance around like creepy marionettes. I mean, that's an absolute horror show, I will say, but very, very cool imagery for a scary movie. I don't know, I'm a fan. Other stories say that the Nakamata can start strange fires, curse families, and even shapeshift into a human being. Yeah, some legends even say a Nakamata can transform into like an old woman who like lives among everyone else without anyone knowing, a secret covert demon cat spy, which admittedly is very cool. I would say late 90s Nickelodeon, you know, maybe early 2000s Cartoon Network. You know, we'll revisit this. I'm gonna make that happen. I have a lot of cartoon ideas on this episode, I guess, is the point I'm trying to get across. Anyways, back to the Nakamata. So, according to Japanese folklore, that quiet old lady down the street might secretly be a two-tailed demon cat. So be nice to old ladies and be nice to your cats. This is kind of the moral of the story we're trying to get at. And just kind of, you know, to be safe, just in case. You never know. Demon cats, they live among us, and I think that is a fact we all need to accept in order to move on with our lives safely. People in old Japan were actually so afraid that their cats would turn into a Nakamata that they would cut their cats' tails short so that the tail couldn't split into two. Now, I don't know if that actually works because I have a dog. His name is Pogo. He's a little Minpin, and he was a rescue. Before we got him, someone else snipped their tail, which I'm not a huge fan of, but it is kind of what you do with those dogs as far as I know. But they're still a little nub. I feel like if he would, a nub is enough to split into two. It might look strange, like a little slingshot or something from Dennis the Menace, but I feel like it could still split into two. So how short were these Japanese folks cutting their cat's tail? I don't know. Maybe I'm thinking too much into that. Moving on. The Nakamata also shows up all over Japanese pop culture, anime, video games, manga, etc. So if you ever seen a magical cat with two tails in anime, there's a very good chance it was inspired by the Nakamoto legend. So even if you've never heard the name before, you're probably seen one in some kind of form of pop culture. And you know what? You probably didn't even realize it. No. So remember, if your cat starts walking on two legs, suddenly has two tails, and is surrounded by dancing corpses, I gotta be honest, the dancing corpses is the big giveaway here. Well, congratulations. You no longer have a pet. You have a yokai known as a Nakamata. And that is this week's spooky stuff. Ba-ba-ba-ba-cha-ba-ba-ba! It's kind of cool. It's like your cat evolves, like in Pokemon. I make that reference for Ryan. He's sick at home, but he would definitely use this opportunity to make a Pokemon reference. And I am going to use this opportunity to do a perfect segue into the grand big show part of this. I mean, this if spooky stuff was our opener, here is our headliner. On this week's Earth Pop, we have an interview with voice actress and voice coach Chris Carr. Here we go. The Earth Pop Report, talking about everything to do with Earth pop culture.
Woo! Here we go.
Hey guys, I'm sitting here with Chris Carr, a wonderful voice actress and voice coach, and we were just super lucky to have her with us. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me, man. This is fun.
Excellent. Thanks for being here. And I've actually been wanting to get a voice actress or voice actor, or excuse me, same thing, voice actor on this show for so long because we've had conversations with people during the audition process and during onset and film, but I really only have what DVD special features show me about recording, you know, voices for well, you've done a bunch of anime and cartoons, even video games.
Yeah. It's very different than on camera stuff too, because you at least in that usually get some semblance of feedback. You know,
Sure.
you audition for a person. There's a lot of times when you have a callback, you actually get to interact with somebody or read with another person. And so many times in voiceover, it's just you alone in your weird little booth, and then they just forward your stuff along. You maybe get a callback and maybe get redirected, but for the most part, you don't really work with another human being until you get the gig, and then you still aren't working with that many people. You're just by
Sure.
yourself. But like, let's try that again. It's such a different animal.
When you are recording in a booth, I'm Italian, so I have very hand movements. I move, I talk. This is what. Or what about you? Do you find
Oh.
that it's hard to record when you're so animated?
No, it is so good. I am also Italian. I always joke that without my hands, I wouldn't be able to speak. I
Thank
gotta
you.
have these. Yeah. What? How would people know? How would people know? I don't know if you noticed this in the pandemic, but once we all were masked up and everything, everyone started getting more kind of like big with their gestures and everything because we were losing that kind of neurotypical social norm way of how we kind of communicate, where we look at people's faces and kind of go, I think they're into this conversation, or ooh, they are so checked out. We all started really gesturing and doing a ton of stuff. And that's the same thing in voiceover. Because we're losing that kind of look at your meat suit, so to speak, we have to do a little bit more. So if you are a big hand talker, if you are a very physical communicator, it actually really pays off for you. We constantly tell people that they need to be moving around in there. Obviously, you can't like stomp around or hit the mic or anything like that. But if you're just kind of, you know, perfect posture, not gesturing, and you're just talking into this. Once we hear that recording, it's that moment of, do you hate this? Do you hate this so much? Because we just can't see your eyes light up or anything else like that. So it really helps to be that kind of gestury focused communicator.
I guess you really wouldn't know until you got hired for the next job that they liked you, right?
Pretty much. It's always the, if you get called back, you did a good job. And if you never hear from them again, you do the, huh.
Oh,
Well,
well. Yeah.
on to the next one, I guess.
So I know your career started around 2012 in voice acting, and it was, what was it, Starship Troopers 4, right? Starship Troopers Invasion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dang, yeah. That was the first one, and it was a complete fluke. It was a complete accident.
How did you fall into that?
I was acting in Houston, and I was doing a lot of stage work and then regional commercials. And every time I booked a commercial, I would kind of do a, do you need any voiceover? Do you need any of this? I was really trying to get into this industry. And so I was at my day job where I bartended and hosted at a restaurant, and this guy came in and he was just having a bad day. And so I just really like listened to him and kind of just let him vent and everything. And I slowly found out that he was a voiceover director for Sentai Filmworks
Nice.
and was just like, I'm not going to push it. I'm not going to say I'm an actor. I don't want to be that person who's like, oh, well, let me slide my resume over. And dinner service picked up and got really crazy. And so one of my other bartenders came over and went, hey, she can't talk to you anymore. She's an actor. Just give her a job, bro. And walked away. And this guy went, oh my gosh, yes, absolutely. Come to the studio tomorrow. We'll have you audition. And I figured he was just being nice. I came in anyway. And it was Stephen Foster who did a ton of stuff over at Sentai Filmworks. And so I read two lines and he went, yeah, we'll use you. And so that's how I got that part. And then from there, he just kept calling me in and giving me more stuff. So be nice to literally everyone you meet because you never know.
Well, that's right. I mean, we make jokes about the guy handing the Uber driver handing us resumes, but it happens. Absolutely. And
Absolutely.
good things can come of it. So I wanted to talk a little bit. Is there any difference between when you do voiceover for video games or when you do it for regular animation?
Ooh, that's a great question. Everything comes down to tone.
Sure.
A lot of times, your video games nowadays are going to feel more like almost an HBO drama. There's a reason why everyone's mining this IP. It's really excellent storytelling that tends to be particularly nuanced. Behind me, you can see a whole bunch of game guides and things like that from back in the day. We don't really need those anymore because games are so sophisticated that everything's built into it. So now a game tutorial isn't so much as that, press A to jump. It's more built in. Hey, all right, let's make sure we can take this bird off the ground. Let's figure it out, rookie. And you have these very real world kind of NPCs that almost act like co-stars. Their job is to help reinforce the world that you're in and establish those rules. It's kind of like the same thing as when you would watch superhero shows like The Flash.
Sure.
Having a barista in Jitters talking to you about like a Flash latte just reinforces that superheroes are a big norm in that world. In the same way, video game characters now have to reinforce, yeah, this is a world where we fight monsters, or we have magic, or we all are aware of this plight of some kind. So it tends to be a little bit more nuanced, not always, but cartoons, especially if you're not doing something that's adult animation that lives in that kind of vein of, Pantheon or BoJack Horseman, that tends to be a little bit more wacky. The difference usually is, am I doing black box theater or am I in a musical? And a lot of animation has more of that kind of musical theater sensibility where you're reaching the cheap seats.
In my head, I was wondering, how do you wrap your head around a character when a script isn't a straight beginning to end story? It's because video games, you have choices as a player. So different things that you say, like, how do you wrap your head around a character when you're going with, well, these are 30 different takes of one conversation?
Oh, that's very true. That's difficult because a lot of times when we're auditioning too, we just get random lines. We don't get a full script or scene. And so it is just, hey, we're going to make sure that you can stay in character, not lose the integrity of your voice, but also run this emotional gauntlet and stay kind of in that pocket the whole time. So a lot of times too, because we're having this one-sided conversation, we don't know the full story. And hopefully our director is, oh, yeah, at this point, you've done this battle or this has happened, you'll figure it out. Because video games move really fast too. So a lot of times you don't even know who you're reading for until you get to work and then say, hey, you're these three characters today. All right, this is this person's information. Then we're going to have you play this child. And then, of course, you're going to be this creature at the end. You go, all right, cool.
Cool.
So it is you kind of hoping that you're making smart choices and really jumping in feet first. That's why improv is so important, I think, for voice actors and gets overlooked a lot. But it's also why it's really great to have a very communicative director who can quickly tell you, hey, here are the highlights and here's what's going on. And if you're extra lucky, everyone else is already recorded, so you can actually kind of play off of them. So you can see where they're at in the story and kind of figure it out. But video games are this really interesting situation because unless you're doing really immersive theater, that's interactive, it is the most tied you get to be to your audience where your character, the choices that you've made, then influence that player's choice. And then you guys get to have this really interesting kind of parasocial relationship where they share your agency. So you are doing a whole bunch of alts based on what their choices might be throughout the game. You're making different choices based on how everyone else's interpretation of the other characters are. So it's this very big spinning plate kind of situation that luckily most directors are mining that kind of battlefield for you. So it's, hey, we really need to make sure you hit these certain points so that this pays off for the rest of the players.
seeing the forest for the trees, if you will.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, when recording voices, I know a lot of times you're able to see the recording of the character. But with anime, it coming from a different language, is it a different process for speeding up or slowing down the English translation that may be bigger or smaller than the Japanese translation? Like, you have to fit a whole sentence in a small little, how do you do that?
Dude, these are great questions. Oh man. So anime is really interesting because all of your choices have been made for you, essentially. Unless your character's head is to the back of the screen and you just see the back of their head, you are constantly trying to match their facial emotions. You're also trying to match, this is the actual phrase, the mouth flaps.
Sure.
And so you're trying to cram all this language that doesn't necessarily completely match. So again, improv is a big thing of, oh, do we have to change a line on the fly? Do I have to talk really fast? Do I have to slow down what I'm saying? Because what I'm saying in English is only one phrase, whereas in Japanese or Korean, maybe that's a several word or several syllable kind of thing. So you are always watching your monitor, having your script here, and you'll hear these three beeps, and that's kind of your cue to do your pickup and jump in. And so it is a lot of just, again, spinning plates of, okay, they're saying that line, and they're really big and ridiculous right now, and I've got to match that energy, even though I'm seeing this line for the first time, so I'm going to have this big anime freak out. But then what's cool about anime is you can have those huge, ridiculous moments and then have something that is so heartstringsy and grounded and emotional. I mean, Demon Slayer is a show that I think that does that beautifully, of balancing all of those things of, we can have you be a weird little chibi character for a second, and then we have you, you know, crying over the corpse of your loved one. It's a lot, but it really is. Okay, everything's already been determined because those actors and writers and animators have already made those choices. So now I need to do my part to honor everything they did and just make it a little bit more accessible to certain audiences who maybe can't keep up with the subtitles or just, you know, enjoy listening to a dub. But it always is in service of that story that's already been established by everybody else there.
I've heard a few lines, and just the enunciation you could make in such a small amount of time to get that point across.
Oh, and thank you. Yeah.
No problem. I wanted to ask a couple questions, and they do lead into more questions that are back to what you're doing. But
okay.
Did you get a chance to see a Lord of the Rings, War of the Rohirrim?
Yes.
Yes.
Freaking loved it.
Thank you. I did too. I wanted to bring that up because, one, you're a voice actress, and two, I know you're a huge fan of Lord of the Rings just in general. I mean, Speak Friend Studios is your company who you do voice acting classes and you do things like that, right?
So absolutely.
What I wanted to say is, one, what were your feelings on that film? And two, please lead into Speak Friend Studios. I want to hear about this.
Oh, thank you. Okay. Well, first of all, War of the Rohirrim. I love, and I think this is a really cool thing that is being done with the Lord of the Rings as a whole. I mean, just on Tolkien Reading Day, we had that announcement about Stephen Colbert helming the next script with his son.
Oh, I was going to ask you about that.
Oh, my God. Yeah, we will get into it. I freaking love this. My 16-year-old dog is named Gimli, son of Gloin. I love Lord of the Rings so much. It is one of those light in the darkness kind of pieces of media for me.
My co-host named his son Thorin.
Oh, yeah, that's so amazing.
His name is legally Thorin. Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's
I wanted
cool.
to go Oakenshield, but you know.
obsessed. That's so cool. I just love that they're doing these things where it's, how can we still be true to all of the media that we've already had? And we're not going to retcon anything, but we can add things. And so much of Tolkien is kind of appendices, especially if you read through the Silmarillion, where it's just, hey, this is essentially a historical index, a book of some history and about deep dives into linguistics. Yes! Amazing.
Really hard. This one was pretty good, though. I don't know if you ever read the languages of Gerald Tolkien.
I should get that.
I tried to learn Elven, and I am not a linguistics person, I guess.
Man, my husband would eat that up, though. He's a dialect coach, and so he loves language. So thank you. That is an excellent recommendation that I will go grab for him and look like a really good wife. But I'm just really enjoying taking these kind of, hey, there's a mention of this story, or have you wondered why it's called Helm's Deep, or some things like that that don't detract from the universe or detract from anything that's been established, but it does build upon it. Is it a perfect movie? No, there's some kind of weird CGI moments in animation that I go, oh, I wish the studio let you do your thing. I wish they like gave you some more money so we didn't have to do that shortcut there. But for the most part, that film is so well acted, well written, beautiful. I love the style that it's done in. I really wish more people saw it. It's fun.
I do agree. I wasn't sure if it would make a whole lot of money. It kind of had a high budget. But that being said, I was hoping it'd do better than it did. So given that they're doing many Lord of the Rings things, let's say they do another anime one. What era would you like to act in if you were to be able to do a story in, like, let's say in the Silmarils, maybe in the first stage when we had the lamps? I don't know. What were you thinking?
Oof. I would really love, honestly, to just get into some deep, deep lore.
Sure.
Where we learn more about the various mage factions of how these are all formed, the Ishtari and everything like that, I think would be very cool. I would genuinely love, and I know this might not be everyone's jam, but a slice of life of Tom Bombadil. Because I love that he's just a dude who loves his hot wife. I just love that so much of just, man, I'm so powerful, but I'm chill as hell and I don't need to go do any of this stuff. I want to hang out with this hottie and live my glorious small life. I think there's such a sweetness to that character that I'd love to have explored more. And again, just having, if you do something that is kind of, you know, Ghibli-esque and fantastical or in that kind of anime vein, you can do so much too with just the various monsters, the incredible creatures that are in there. I think you can do some really, really rad kind of, let's talk about the creation of some of these different beings, since so many of them do have this pretty much spiritual kind of ideology behind them, where you can see Tolkien taking so many Christian Judeo ideas and going, but how do I take that and put it into this fantastical realm, which for some of us is not a long walk, and for other people it is a hey, wow, it's really interesting that you made my faith seem this way. So I would love some stuff like that where we kind of get really into the weirdness of how these things were created. The Balrog being related to Gandalf is something that I don't think a lot of people know. And so some of that kind of stuff I would like explored, of how a being can become one thing or another, how they can go towards darkness or light, how this kind of hierarchy works. I think that, particularly in an animated format, would work really, really well.
Yeah, I agree completely, especially the era you're referring to. I've always wanted to see Morgoth realized in animation, because I don't believe you can do that in live action in the same way you could do, like, say, the devil, which is the Tolkien's version.
Yeah, exactly. As evil as we've gotten so far as, you know, just seeing Rings of Power just referred to, and then we see like some weird glow ups and stuff. It's so odd. It's so hard to kind of like nail that aesthetic and not have it feel weird or over the top. This is a strange comparison, but it's also kind of the idea of Pennywise, of there is such a horror to be had here. And how do you showcase that without it feeling super over the top or way too overdone or cartoony or not feeling real? Because if it is the pinnacle of all evil, how do you show evil in its truest form? And isn't that going to be different for everybody too?
That was the point I was trying to make. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But you know, when it comes to it, I think it'd be harder to do the space turtle, but that's just me.
That's fair.
So here's my pitch for you. And who knows, it could happen. If I am ever making an animated Lord of the Rings film, I want to do a buddy comedy with Radagast and you as an anthropomorphic bunny. I'm just saying. That would be my pitch.
Ian. Oh my God.
All you gotta say is that species died off before the events of the books and you're fine.
Oh my God, that's perfect. We can have tomatoes still, and people who are on the fence about tomatoes in Tolkien will also be like, sure. That's when they got eradicated. I love it. Oh my God. I would love to be a little rabbit with Radagast. It'd be a blast.
That's what I'm thinking. And you know what? You were saying how much you like Tom Bombadil. Well, I think Colbert is pretty much basing his next film off the chapters, like, I don't know, it was like 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 or something, the early chapters where they meet Tom Bombadil. So I'm thinking his next film, we're going to get a lot of Tom.
I am really hoping we do, because that to me is one of the things that I think those movies are pretty much perfect. I think they hold up so stunningly, and so much of it's because it's practical.
Sure.
They actually have all these things happening. And I understand why you don't have Tom, because for so many audiences who are still hung up on the Eagles, how do you explain that guy? Why doesn't he do anything?
Well, because he's the manifestation of the song that built creation. That's yeah. why he didn't do anything. Come on, guys.
Well, and then we go, we bring it back to theology a little bit and go, we have that a lot, right? We can't have that kind of like godlike figure be our MacGuffin for everything, can we? Because then we don't go on the journey and we don't have everything happen. But it's hard to explain to your movie audience of, well, then why did you introduce me to this guy?
Exactly.
What was the purpose of him? And I'm hoping that, yeah, this little nice contained story within the story will, one, explain who he is and why he's not part of this kind of next stage of everything, but also give you just some fun insight again to this world and all of its creatures and creations, because he's such a cool part of it. I love the idea of something so powerful, very much in the same line of Morgoth or Sauron or any of those characters, who goes, no, why would I do anything with this power aside from
living life,
see what happens,
singing my songs,
hanging out,
you know, and it's true though, because it's us looking down at an anthill. Mm-hmm. We're not concerned with their business. They have their own society. They're doing their own thing. And I'm just watching and singing my songs.
Exactly. And you know, I want to observe them politely, not be the magnifying glass that's burning them a la a big evil eye. Yeah,
exactly. Well, you know what? I don't know how smooth of a transition that was, but this is all to get us to Speak Friends Studios. I want to know about Speak Friends Studios.
Man, thank you so much for asking about it. It is a real just labor of love that my husband and I put together. I, for so long, would have actors who would begrudgingly come ask me about voice acting advice, where it was, oh, I've got a voiceover audition. I guess you could help me with it. I really want to focus on my real acting. I really want to do this. And I'd always have to do a pump the brakes moment of, acting isn't the title. Voice acting, you're still an actor. Why are we poo-pooing on this, guys? And then the pandemic happened, and I had so many of those on-camera actors jump ship because I was still working. It was, how do I do this? How do I get involved? And so this kind of grew out of it. And the reason why we went with Lord of the Rings Speak Friend is we do love this kind of idea of positivity and light in the world. You know, yeah. Aragorn is such a beautiful kind of beacon of somebody who can question and doubt themselves, but always come to a problem with love and understanding and compassion. And we both have very different acting backgrounds, but have both experienced those kinds of teachers who tear you down to build you up. And we didn't want any of that. Logan has a background in theater. He's a BFA. He is a very quote unquote trained actor, classically trained actor.
Sure.
I am more of a, I kind of fell into this actor. I decided to not study it in college. I have a communications degree, but I still started doing acting in Houston. I lost my job at the Houston Chronicle, and the same night I got my first professional theater job. And so I've just kind of been doing that. So I'm
that
more
seems
of,
like fate. I think that worked out for you. Yeah,
it was perfect. A little bit of wine courage and just went, okay, let's go do this. But so we have these very different kind of backgrounds on. I come to it from a more, I cut my teeth as I was learning. It was a baptism by fire for me. Logan's got all of this like professional training from since he's been professionally acting since he was 10, and then went through all these programs and everything. So we come at it with a business mindset as well as this artistic mindset to try and help you. Our whole idea is that we would love to be the people who kick you off on your journey, because we also don't think you should only work with one teacher ever. We are very, very much actors. We really want to support folks. We want to make acting classes accessible, because a thing that a lot of people don't talk about is it's really expensive to be an actor. You know, we joke about it on a lot of shows about these Nepo babies taking over everything. And I truly don't want to take away from anyone's actual hard work or talent. If you happen to be born into a nice family, that's fine. You had nothing to do with that. But it is an access thing where, yeah, if you don't have to worry about your student loans or getting food on the table or things like that, an acting class isn't something you're going to prioritize. Of course it's not. You wouldn't. If you have the means to take classes with whoever you want or do anything you want, you can pursue the arts and it's much more accessible to you. So we try to keep our prices low. We try to make sure that we have plenty of options for actors so they don't go into debt trying to take classes or anything like that. We keep our classes small so that you actually get feedback and get to work. Because I can't tell you how many times I've taken a workshop and gone, wow, there's 30 people in here and this is a 2-hour class. I don't think I'm going to get any attention. And I spent all this money. So we try to just make sure that we can come to everyone and work with them on their level. I do most of the voiceover stuff. I do intro to voiceover. We have our next class April 2nd, and that is a four-week class where we talk about commercials, video games, animation, how to audition for all three of those kind of different pockets of voiceover, as well as what sites to get you started on and what equipment to use. And then I have a whole advanced class afterwards that's 8 weeks where we get into like really specific stuff. My husband Logan is our dialect coach, so he does one-on-ones, but he also does breath coaching. Cockney is usually the first dialect because that's kind of his gateway drug for folks. It's really difficult, and if you can get that one and figure out how that's a new language, you can get into most stuff.
Yeah, advanced, I can't do Southern without sounding like I'm making a joke, so I get it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I can't do it without making a joke.
Well, starting out really cartoony, though, is a great way to do stuff. You know, if you start at a 10, we can bring you down to an 8. If you start at a 2 and we got to get you up to that 8, that's when we've got a problem. Can I hear your Southern?
Well, I don't know about any of that, you know?
See, I don't think that's like jokey. I think that's quite good. This is also, you're doing like a kind of Georgia situation because you're softening those R's. So there's rhotic and non-rhotic, and one you really hit the R's. I'm from Texas, so we hit that. I'm East Texas too, so I tend to talk more up in like my nose and head. Sure. So I do kind of this. I get really twangy and hit all of my R's real hard. My name is Chris Carr. I'm from the Woodlands. If we go into that more Georgia stuff, that's when it's that kind of RP British dialect that's melted in the sun.
Sure.
So we start up here in British, and then we kind of go and we lower that down, and everything just gets real soft. And
you just sounded like two characters from King of the Hill. So you're definitely got the Texas down, I will say.
Yay! Well, yeah, you're in a great start place. That's a good one. Don't beat up yourself up. That was pretty good, man.
Well, excellent. You know, I might actually end up taking one of these classes. It's nice that you guys are trying to make it affordable, because I lived on Fountain and Las Palmas for like 10 years, and I had a rent controlled apartment that it was $1,500 for a one bedroom. And even that was hard to do the day job thing. I had to stop growlings because, unfortunately, you know, Veggie Grill wasn't paying as much as I needed it to at the time.
Yep. Yeah. One. I mean, I know everyone knows this, but you know, everything keeps costing more money. Wages are not going up. It's really, really hard. And I can't. Oh, you're so lucky. You had a rent controlled place. We moved into a house that we rent from a very sweet couple that luckily only does the like 3% increase. They don't have to, but they're just real sweet. And we just are so thankful because, yeah,
be the best
LA
tenants
rent is
ever.
No joke. Yeah, we're trying our best.
Hey, everybody, I'm Andy.
And I'm John. We're the hosts of Zombie Strains, the podcast where we watch all of the zombie movies in chronological order.
It has been a wild ride so far, discovering where and when all our favorite zombie tropes originated. Things like the first cannibal zombies,
Bowery at Midnight, 1942,
the first rage zombie,
Teenage Zombies, 1959,
and the first homicidal zombie,
Dr. Blood's Coffin, 1961.
If you love zombie films as much as we do, join us on Zombie Strains.
Find Zombie Strains on your podcast app of choice.
So you said there was a difference between video games and movies and cartoons. How would you approach it differently if I was going into an audition right now for a video game or an animated series? You know, how would you tell me to approach it differently?
Fantastic. Okay, so that video game, first of all, we're going to double check and see, is this pre-existing IP? Is this a game that's already been established in the world? Because this is not cheating, this is just working smarter. You should do the same thing if you were doing commercials or television or film. If this exists already, let's figure out that tone. So if you're auditioning for something like, you know, one of the Uncharted games, we know that this is going to be fairly realistic, but fun. You know, it's going to have a fun, adventurous tone. It's going to feel a little Indiana Jones-esque. We can play the serious moments, but we can also really enjoy what we're doing. If we are doing something like Borderlands, we're going to be unhinged. We're going to just be absolutely balls to the wall, so big, so ridiculous, playing up innuendo, playing up the enjoyment of the violence, if that works for your character, which for most of Borderlands characters, yes, it does. But if we're doing something that is new, we can always look at the art that's provided if they provide it for us. Hey, is this a very hyper-realistic looking character? Okay, we're probably going to ground this then. We're going to treat this more like, again, an HBO show. Think about those cut scenes as being close-ups almost. Your microphone is your scene partner, so this is always their ear. How are we talking to them? Do we get really nice and intimate in certain moments with them? Do we have to back off because we're fighting or we're yelling, or do we get in their face and, again, get closer to that mic? So a lot of that is going to kind of come into play. Is it a scene versus random lines? If it's the random line thing, we're going to treat it like it's a best hits album. It's all from one artist, so there's going to be congruency. But I'm not going to just give you the hits. I'm going to give you a tasty B-side, you know? I'm going to let you know what else is available here. There's this great concept of a tonic line, something that is alter to how the character usually behaves. And so if you have the opportunity to pop that in there in any audition, that's a fun thing, as long as it makes sense. So
sure.
An example of that is, you know, if you're playing Lois Lane, she's always the smartest person in the room. She's super confident. She's really together. Nothing really intimidates her. But if there's a moment between her and Clark, maybe that is a moment of her being vulnerable or softer or scared, because she's allowed to be in those moments. And that's her partner in everything. So we can have her kind of bring down the bravado a little bit. Now, if we're doing an animated series, again, we're going to look at, hey, what's this character look like? Are we going to bring any of that into how we're doing this voice? Who are we reading for, too, is another thing that comes into play. This is why it's really important to be consuming media. If you're auditioning for DreamWorks, a lot of times they like a more natural kind of real person voice. So even if I'm going in to play a 16-year-old girl, I could go up here and I could be really high and I could have that kind of helium voice and talk to you like this. But more so, they want me to play the emotional intelligence of that 16-year-old in something closer to my natural speaking voice. So I'm not going to be down here the whole time, but I might raise my voice a little bit and get a little more nervous about some things and really try to bring in that kind of energy. Because if I'm a teenager who really gets anxious and kind of hates himself, that's a different energy than an almost 40-year-old who is just going, I don't care. You'll like me or you won't. So we're going to kind of play around with some of those different things. And you just also remind yourself, as a cartoon, give yourself permission to be a cartoon. One of the biggest hurdles we have, particularly with on-camera actors, is they get so worried about overacting. And what we usually have to do is, hey, I just want you to record yourself doing this, record it exactly how you want to, and then listen to it. And again, because we don't have that neurotypical physical reaction, because about 70% of the way we communicate to people is through body language, when we don't have that, we'll hear a recording and go, wow, this person sounds miserable or checked out or angry. And it's just because we can't see them. So when you give it that extra physicality and that little extra bit of chutzpah, then we go, oh my gosh, yeah, they are super excited. They are really nervous about this. You got to almost paint by numbers with your emotions sometimes here, because just that lack of visual cue sometimes makes it seem like you're not fully invested. So you do usually have to go full tilt. And again, there's exceptions to every rule here. Everything's kind of pirate code. It's more of a guideline, really.
Yeah.
So we're going to just go, oh, okay, this is a Disney Junior show. Okay, I have permission to be a little big. I also have to make sure that my energy is big, but I am taking my time so I can make sure my little fella who's watching this is following along every step of the way. Oh, this is a more zany, ridiculous, psychedelic cartoon that's probably more aimed at adults. I can take a few different swings here and I can kind of play around with that range. Yeah. So we can always kind of figure that out based on audience, again, tone, and looking at the character too. So a lot of similarities, but then each time you're just kind of adjusting to make sure that you are being of service to that script in that world.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. You know, I guess it would play well if it's Adult Swim versus the regular Cartoon Network, that you have to decide where the tone is.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Aqua Teen Hunger Force has a different vibe than like Bluey.
Go figure. Although at this point in my life with a three-year-old, I've seen way more of Bluey than Aqua Teen, but I'm with you.
Can I tell you though, Bluey, I was watching my friend's kids and they were like, oh yeah, just put like two episodes of Bluey on and then they'll go to bed. I got invested, man. I kept watching. I was like, this is delightful. It's really good for Australian dialects too.
You know what it's else is really cool about that is the two young ladies playing Bluey and Bingo, they're completely hidden from the public eye. They don't go to things. Their name isn't out there, so they can just be kids and not bombarded in school and in life. And I just thought that was
perfect.
Amazing. Yeah.
That's so great. I could not imagine having a kid go through that. Oh, good for them. That's the way to do it. As a parent, do you think, like, is a lot of your mental real estate kind of devoted to a lot of that, how they're moving through the world and how they're taking being seen, taking being out there?
I think I have a little bit more of a perspective because I think we're around the same age. So basically, okay. I feel like I had a little bit more perspective and I did my 20s and I went to my auditions and had my rooftop parties. And now it's like, okay, I'm guiding this one. Let's see if we could do a little bit different than, you know, our parents did. It's navigating shows is a good thing. Like Bluey's great. We don't like Coco Melon because it's too sporadic.
Oh my gosh. It's terrible. I think it's sensory overload for kids.
That's
it's
what
too
we were
much.
Saying.
Yeah.
I don't know. Personally, I like tuning out to things. I listen to a lot of Audible. And when the pandemic hit, we had to switch from our film kind of centric career and do more this kind of stuff. We did a show called Tattered Tales, which is an audio drama show. And then this one, and which brings me to, I know you with Robert Meyer Burnett did a 6-episode LA Noir. And I know you were in 6 episodes. Was it all the episodes were 6 episodes?
Oh, I think it might be a total of 8.
Sure.
There's
sure.
a couple I'm not in.
But I'd love to hear about that experience. Yeah.
Oh, this was really cool because we actually got to record together, some of us, which was so great. And it's something that Robert insisted on. I love R&B so much. I miss working with that guy. He's so fun. And hopefully we're doing some more projects in the future together. But he was very insistent where I came in and read my lines, and I had this wonderful other reader with me who was filling in while we were finding our lead actor. And even though I recorded everything, once we got Michael Rosenbaum attached, Rob was like, Chris has to come back in. We're paying for another day. She's coming back in. That way they can actually read to each other. And it makes such a difference. And it's just so nice because usually, again, you're by yourself and you're imagining how somebody's potentially responding to you. And you're trying to come up with the different takes of, okay, well, if they come at me with a really angry take here, maybe I'm going to be defensive, or maybe I'm going to shoot it right back to them, or maybe I'm going to be a wilting flower. I don't know. It depends on how kind of all of this comes together. So you usually do a couple different alternates as well. It was so nice to be able to be in the moment with this person and actually make eye contact. Like our characters fall in love. And so it's really nice to be able to actually look at your scene partner when you're telling them you love them and have that moment of, oh my gosh, I'm actually looking into a person's eyes as I'm being really vulnerable. So you don't have to do as much of the theater of the mind that we usually have to do.
Sure.
Voiceover a lot of times is like playing D&D, where if you don't have a great dungeon master who's making you feel immersed, you don't feel like you're in it. So it was really cool to be able to do that. We got to go to Comic-Con to promote it, which was just a dream come true for me. I've always wanted to be a panelist. My husband's in it, and he plays a lawyer in it, and he got to do some really, really fun stuff. I got to coordinate and direct our ADR group, which was a first for me, and so much fun because we couldn't say modern terminology. We had to, Rob got us menus from an actual 1920s restaurant so we could go through and order weird specific things. We would have some time period stuff thrown in, so we would have to make sure we also were talking about where we were in Chicago or where we were in Miami, but also making sure that we didn't say anything too current.
Sure.
Which was super fun and challenging. It was just a real delight to work on. It was so much fun. And Marianne Beam is just a little sweetie. She's just so pure. She's just this little actress who's just trying her best in it and really wants to believe in this guy. And then has a really heartbreaking kind of arc in it that led a lot of my voiceover direction after I did this was I had to do a really emotional scene that was very close to home for me. It was kind of like my worst potential horror I could think of.
Oh, no.
And so it's spoilers for anyone who hasn't listened. Her brother goes missing. That's why she first hires this PI. And things do not end well for her brother. And I have a little brother, I'm the eldest, and the idea of telling my parents anything ever happened to him would be just devastating to me. And so, you know, we do the scene and it's super fun and I'm crying in the booth and I got like snot tears going on, but then you leave and you still have all that stuff kind of like in your body, so to speak, because your nervous system doesn't know the difference.
No,
where it's
it
just,
doesn't.
Oh, I cried for 45 minutes. You know how this goes. And then you're like, why do I still feel sad? Oh, because I cried for 45 minutes imagining that something horrible happened to a person I love.
Yeah, your body is literally recovering from trauma. It doesn't know the difference,
yeah!
Like you said. Yeah,
exactly. So I was doing some Chloe Zhao stuff before I knew Chloe Zhao was doing this. And we're like, okay, I'm going to go like hang out with my friends, pet a dog, have a dance party, really, really shake this off and reset myself. So it taught me a lot too about what I needed as an actor. And Rob just always gave us so much space to play and try new things and just really encourage us. He's such a supportive director. So it was really, really cool to not only see how he works, but to work with him.
Well, I know the benefits from recording with people in the room is that you could play off each other, but how was it? Because I assume, were you both being recorded at the same time, or was it just, okay, you were, because in my head, you'd be stepping over each other's lines. How do you avoid that?
Well, that's something they encouraged every now and then.
Really?
Of, hey, in this fight, layer on top of each other, like really go after each other. And so we'd be sitting like this. I'd be here and he'd be across the way. And every now and then it would be a let's kind of like talk over one another so it feels more realistic and lived in. The really cool thing about True Noir, too, it's something you should listen to in your headphones because the mixing on it is beautiful. I'm a sound geek. I produce demos. And so we have these incredible moments of, you can hear placement. So those steps are far away and it gives you this sense of depth and dimension to a room of, oh, the staircase has to be like across the room over there. And, oh, you can hear them walking above these people right now and then making that full step down there. So we have really, really beautiful, realistic sound. So we were encouraged to have that. Oh, as I smack my mic, we were encouraged to have that on top of how we were acting with each other. And every now and then it would be a, hey, let's take that back so we get that nice and clean and we don't overlap. But our engineers were incredible. And there were a lot of things that just naturally do need to overlap a little bit. We have audio sex scene, which is always weird to record. Not as weird as having to do it on camera, but it is always
filming
weird.
Filming one
just
was weird, but I was never there.
It's always just a, and we're doing this today, I guess.
All
and
right.
audio is such an odd one of just, well, we're going to sit here and make noises. But stuff like that, obviously, both of you are making those noises around the same time as each other. And so a lot of stuff did have to play out in a very kind of natural, realistic way. Without
you're not taking turns in that instance.
Yeah. So certain things had to be, okay, this is going to be just like Marianne's moment to talk, or okay, this is going to be his moment to talk. And others were, no, let's just kind of like fire off at each other and see how this goes.
I wanted to know, given the opportunity, you have your choice of any animated show or movie from now, ever, you know, from way back to the beginning to now, like what would have been or is your dream participation in animation?
Oh, man. Dang. That's a great question. That is a big stumper. Oof.
Here, I'll tell you mine real quick. Ralph Bocci, Wizards. That would be mine. I would want to be Peace.
Oh,
doesn't
so
say
good.
Much and it's awesome.
Hell yeah. That's a great one. I mean, she's killing it, but I would have loved to be Chopper in One Piece.
Sure.
Man, she's doing such a good job as Tony Chopper. Oh boy. A weird one, like this is a kind of deep cut, I guess. One of the first voices I ever practiced as a little kid was Bon Bon from Little Nemo Adventures in Dreamland.
Right
on.
Just
like, hi, Nemo, I'm Bon Bon.
It's one of my favorite movies as a kid. I was really thrown when, what's his name? Jason Momoa did like a live action remake.
Yeah.
I never gave it a watch because the original animation just meant so much to me that I don't want to do it.
It's fun. I will give it that. It's fun they do their own kind of thing with it, and it won't subtract your enjoyment of the original. Super NES game of it too. I love that game so much. I love that movie. I love the comic. But maybe that I'd love to be any Disney character.
Sure.
That's probably the big one, or anyone close to Pokemon or Sailor Moon would be huge.
All right. Well, like Pokemon has a new video game like every week. You might be able to do that.
I'm hoping. So much anime right now, too, is non-union, which I completely understand. Most voiceover work, honestly, too, it's about 70% is non-union. And I get it. But also, some union contracts would be pretty slick, guys. Let's bring that back over here. Let's do that.
Well, I'm sure you feel the same way as I do when it comes to big-name actors taking voiceover roles. Zootopia 2 is a great example. It seems like every character was almost an A-list actor, even with one line. And it's not that I have an issue with that. I get that. We could put their name on the poster. But how do you feel, I assume, like that shouldn't be the case? And I would like to hear your thoughts on it.
Yeah, I definitely feel a way about it. And listen, there are some actors who are on-screen actors who also work so well in this medium. The Sonic franchise comes to mind. I think everyone involved there is fantastic. And, you know, we have this new addition of Kristen Bell coming into play. She and Ben Schwartz are actors who fully understand the mediums that they work in. If you see them on stage, on screen, or doing a voiceover, they really understand how to manipulate their own instrument and hone their craft to really fit those mediums. I don't think other actors always do that as successfully.
Sure.
And one of my issues, we've talked about this so much on, you know, Christian Harloff's show, is budgets are a big thing getting in the way of movies being successful. And a lot of it does go to paying actors. And of course, actors should be fairly compensated. It would be foolish of me as an actor to say, we'll cut our pay. There is a limit, though. There are certain price tags that I say to myself, that's kind of batshit. What are we doing? When it comes to so many of these animated films, I know we have this kind of studio exec mindset of, well, we have to have a name attached for people to watch. You don't. The IP really does sell itself. We've had actors talk about this with the Marvel and DC franchises of the character's the hero. It doesn't really matter if we get an A-lister here if you actually really love the source material. Kids don't know who Chris Pratt is. You know, Chris, little kids aren't going, I'm only going to see Mario if that guy from Parks and Rec is on. Like, that's not a thing that's happening.
I think Garfield proved that.
Absolutely. Just, wow, really, really drawing between Chris Pratt and Samuel L. Jackson here, who, hey, they're good at what they do on screen. I'm not going to berate them on any of that. But you could have also gotten a fantastic journeyman actor who could harken back to that 90s Garfield sound. We could have the Super Mario movies without having all these actors in there. I love Donald Glover. I don't understand the point of him being Yoshi. Especially
I don't
since
either.
Most of it's, yeah, it's so
is
many
he gonna
just
talk?
Like, wah, wah.
Exactly.
Like, Winston A. Marshall's theory is that there's going to be one line where all of a sudden it just pans to him being like, are you serious? And we're going to hear Donald Glover's voice for the first time. And then the rest of the time, it's going to be the, wah, 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 and that's
I mean,
it.
I get it for a novelty's sake, because in season one, 1997 of South Park, we had George Clooney play the dog. So yeah. In that instance, it made sense, but they weren't making a big deal out of it. That was the joke, is that they weren't making a big deal out of it.
Exactly. So. You have so many people who are so capable of this. And we also, I mean, shout out to my buddy, Raul Sabe. He is a sound alike. And so he does a bunch of stuff on Netflix for the bad guys. He's done stuff for Trolls. And he's such a phenomenal actor. And you have these A-listers who it's, well, we can't afford them for the TV show, or they don't have the time, or they don't want to come back in. Again, a kid doesn't really care that this anthropomorphized wolf is Sam Rockwell. Sam Rockwell's an amazing actor, but some little kid, it's not going to bother them and it's not going to move the needle. So it is one of those things of, we can really reel in budgets and we can have really amazing new talent really shine. Not even new talent. There's a ton of journeyman actors who would thrive in so many of these roles and who would also be able to give back to the fans in such a beautiful way. And so there are times where it is this person did a fine job, but I think someone probably could have done it better.
Yeah.
And there's exceptions to that each time. I just feel like it is a really big waste of your resources, though, to go, hey, let's make sure we pay, you know,
anyone.
Brie Larson, her day rate. And again, an actress who I love, and I'm really excited for her to be Rosalina, if I'm being honest.
Sure.
But
sure.
Like, let's have her have a cameo in Zootopia and make sure that we like give her a dump truck of money.
Yeah, you know, we talked about the Lord of the Rings, War of the Rohirrim, and that that budget is kind of what, in my opinion, what made that film not possible to make money, because I like anime, I like animation, but they usually don't blow up the box office. And knowing that, you really should try to make that movie a little cheaper. So I agree with you. If you get a bunch of A-list actors that you have to pay $5 million each for a day's work, you're blowing your wad too early, for lack of a better word.
Exactly. And there is a happy medium here too, right? Because we do have so many anime actors who they get paid a day rate that is a couple hundred dollars to show up and do this work. And then they're in a movie that blows up at the box office. You have, you know, Demon Slayer just dominating. And there's a reason why a lot of these actors then do, you know, cameo or the convention circuit or other things like that, because then that helps just actually give them an income versus that one day of work that then they don't see residuals or, you know, any kind of cut on that kind of thing. So there are kind of these two extremes where you go, there has to be a middle ground here, guys, where we can make sure people get living wages, but also we don't have to rely entirely on having huge names come in and blow up the whole budget that we have.
And I agree. It is tough living in a gig-based, having a gig-based career when you aren't the best at managing money, and most creative people aren't the best at managing money. So
my friends and I, every year we do our goals together, and each year me and this other gal have learned money and still haven't, still struggling. Where the only lesson I've learned is more seems to be better. More seems to help.
There was it was called Good Fortune, a new movie that Keanu Reeves was in playing an angel.
Yes.
Well, he has this line in there where he's like, you know, he thought money would solve all his problems. Well, what happened? Well, it seems to have solved most of his problems.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Well, you know what? I think it's about time to wrap it up. But so I have one last question, and then I want you to tell us all about you and what you're doing and all the things that you want to plug and advertise. I know you have podcasts. I know you got those, Speak Friend Studios. But before that, because we mentioned it earlier, how do you feel about Stephen Colbert's idea for a sequel to Lord of the Rings?
I'm so here for it. I love it. Well, because first of all, there is no one who touches Colbert's knowledge of Tolkien and everything. I love the you come into my house lives rent free in my brain of when James Franco tried to challenge him on like the quote unquote deep lore of the Lord of the Rings. He knows this stuff backwards and forwards. So one, it's in such good hands. So that makes me really happy. I love, again, like we were talking about at the beginning of this, I really love how you can do something that tells a quote-unquote new story, or at least new to us, without detracting or retconning anything that's already been established. So that it is, hey, we're going to just have this add to what also happened. We're going to continue to build out this world for you a bit more. And I do like the idea of it being this nice contained little pocket in there. I think right now, and I completely understand why, we are in such a Kenya franchise at world. And obviously this falls into that of still existing in the Lord of the Rings mythos and universe. But I love the idea, again, of almost slice of life stories of, hey, I want to just take this tiny moment, this 3-day excursion or this one battle or this couple of chapters where this character really shines and really focus on that. I think that is so smart, and I think that's the way to approach this. These books are so dense. I know everyone makes the joke. I know everyone's like, and then Tolkien talks about grass for, 30 chapters. Yeah, it's fine. I love it.
To be fair, he was talking about the God who created the grass and why he created the grass and what the grass meant to him. So it was a little bit more.
Exactly. Like, you guys, I'm not religious. I have this. Like, this is... Take me to church, JRR. Okay, let's go. Talk to me about your deities and your languages. So
Silmarillion is like reading the Bible, to be fair. It is dense.
It really is. It's so dense. And it's one of those things, too, where I will read it repeatedly, and it's still so much of it is, I did not retain any of that. I mean, oh my gosh, I can't. It's just so much information. So I think telling stories, though, that do fall into that, this is true to our story, this is true to our movies we've done, it's not detracting from anything, it's just this pocket, is so, so smart. And I'm excited to see what else they do from here. I'm hoping, because like Hunt for Gollum is pretty interesting as well to me, of how did he get captured, what happened here, We do know the outcomes to these things. And so that's one of the parts that is a, can you still make this exciting if I know how the story ends?
That was my worry, yeah.
Yeah, I've long been a F prequels kind of person of, I don't need to know. I don't need to know. I already know where they end up. Don't show me. Smallville, I was one of those people who was like, I'm going to start watching once Lois shows up because I know how this ends.
Sure.
You know, I have a hard time suspending my disbelief when I know where the story is going. In our house, we always joke, my husband has no problem with that. He will watch Moana and be like, do you think she makes it? Are you kidding me? You've watched this movie 1,000 times. Of course she makes it. And also it's a Disney movie. And he's like, I don't know. But
I love to be able to do that, for the record. I remember every moment of every film. Once I see it once, I can't relive it the same way.
It is truly a gift. I am very envious of it. He'll be like, oh, I'm not going to watch any of the trailers because I don't want to know anything about this movie. And I'm like, oh my God, to live in your world would be so beautiful. Just go into a film with no expectation whatsoever and be like, wow, I can just appreciate this. How neat. I got so sidetracked. But I do think that Stephen Colbert knows these characters so well that it should be such an interesting character study that I'll leave satisfied, you know?
Sure.
That's the hope, at least, where it's, okay, and I know where they're going off to now, and I know that this is how the rest of the story goes. I hope this is a really lovely revelation for some of these characters of, oh, and this is why this happens, or, oh, now I fundamentally understand this character more.
Sure.
You know, there's been so many little essays and videos done on the various hobbits and everything. I am a big Pippin apologist. I love that guy. I think he's just the best. And I love how many people have done he's not just this little idiot. There are there's so much merit to what he does. And he has one of the best character arcs here of his growth and everything.
Sure.
But we all kind of land on man, you're the reason why Boromir got killed ultimately. You know, so I'm hoping there are some moments like that, though, where we have a better understanding of these characters. And if that's what I walk away with, then I'm a happy camper.
You know, I'm just trying to go into it without the fact that Viggo Mortensen isn't returning makes 100% sense. He is a much older man. I don't know. I have a real trouble, not with voices, with cartoons. They change the voice actor and I can suspend my disbelief. But actors, when they change, it's hard for me to look at them as the same actor. And I just, that's my only worry. I loved the Hunt for Gollum short film that unfortunately got taken offline as soon as they announced this movie. Yeah. But, you know, so I'm prepared. We'll see.
Yeah. I think it will be a little jarring to see some other faces, sure. But I'm also really happy that they're not digitally de-aging Viggo.
If it was one scene, maybe. Maybe,
but like a whole ass movie.
Yeah.
If I'm supposed to watch this forever, though, if all 2 hours I'm clocked in going, why is his face like that? Why? It's hard too when the movie exists and you have somebody playing the younger character and it's but I saw them in this role at that age and now it's you. There is that kind of difficulty connecting the dots sometimes, where at least with an animated character, they look similar or the same. And typically the actor doing it, a lot of times we're told, you know, we're going to, you know, kind of do a voice match, or this is still going to be an homage to that kind of character. You know, if you look at the Batman series on Amazon,
sure,
where Hamish is doing a really great kind of ode to Kevin Conroy, it feels like your Batman is still there. When we see somebody else physically be Batman, we go, I don't know about that.
That's so interesting to me. I never thought about that. How would you, if not given a direction by the director, how would you approach reprising a character that has already been? Would you try to match the voice exactly? Or would you, you know, do your own thing? I guess it would depend on if aging happened between the two films or something.
Yeah, I would. There would be questions asked too. And I probably would do, I'm a big proponent of multiple takes in an audition, unless it's a huge audition with multiple pages and I don't want to waste casting's time. But if I just have little sides, I'll probably do two takes, sometimes a third if it's a really short thing. And I have takes that actually justify themselves, right?
Yeah.
I got to read for something recently that I can't say what it is, but it would be the first time you ever heard this character speak who has canonically been around for a long time. And so it was, oh my gosh, okay, so do I play them American like so much of the main cast? Do I play them British or French like a lot of the supporting? Okay, let me give them those options as well. So if I'm coming in to say maybe they need a new Hartley, right? I'm going to definitely lean into, all right, Gotham is technically Jersey. I'm going to do that kind of Arlene Sorkin voice, and I'm going to lean into that. But then maybe I'm going to play it a different way as my alt take and really mess around with that. You know, we have Kaylee Cuoco, who does she only gets hard Jersey, really, when she's around her family.
Sure.
And I think that's such a fun, smart choice. But do I want to just go, I'm an Arlene sound alike, you can hear me do this Mr. J, much in the same way that Tara Strong has done it? Or do I play around with it and kind of make it my own? And so I would probably give them those kind of options.
Fair enough. I guess for me, I would also pick okay, well, the animation style is so different, so the voice should be different, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, I'm talking too long. You need to tell us about all the great things you're doing and plug your stuff, please.
Okay. Oh my gosh. Well, first of all, please check out the Christian Harloff Show. I'm pretty much on there every single Friday. I also have my own podcast, Two Filthy Casuals, with Amy Newman, who is so freaking funny. It's a really, really good time. New episodes of that are out every Friday usually as well, wherever you get your podcasts. Speak Friend Studio, if you would like a voiceover class. My intro to VO class starts April 2nd at 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. The classes are all on Zoom. It's super accessible. We also do a discount if you want to pay via Venmo. So you can always just hit up the studio and we can get you situated. So that's there. We do demos. We do dialect classes. We do one-on-one coaching for auditions. So anything you need, hit us up. We also have a really great community where once you've taken classes with us, we have a Discord. And so our students on there are giving each other peer feedback, talking about equipment, posting auditions that are open. Really, really good stuff. And lastly, I do have an audiobook coming out soon. This is going to be is of a particular taste to people. It's a book called Killers of Roe. It is a political nonfiction book just talking about women's rights and their right to choose and how that had been taken away and which kind of politicians and groups were behind that. That might not be everyone's cup of tea. I was really, really proud to be part of it. I felt really honored to be asked to do the voice for it. And that should be out soon wherever you can buy audiobooks.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I will definitely check that out on Audible.
Awesome.
Well, I wanted to say thank you very much for being on the show. I genuinely appreciate it. I'm a big fan of yours for a long time. And just thanks from everyone here at Earthling Entertainment.
See ya!
Well, I hope all you Earthlings out there enjoyed that interview. I know I had a blast, and Chris is such a nice person. And I don't know, if you guys want to pursue any kind of voice acting, I definitely recommend checking out her classes. Awesome bargain, lot of fun. But with that, we're going to jump in now to the next segment of the show, which is, as you guys know, a little thing that's all about aliens. That's right. Sit back and enjoy this week's
Disclosure Discussion. It's about aliens and stuff.
Haha. So, you know, to keep in line with the rest of the themes of the show, I wanted to cover the Utasarabuna incident. And so we've kind of briefly covered this before. We've mentioned it while doing other Japanese folklore stories, but I wanted to take a moment and actually do a little bit of a deep dive on this story in particular. So if you guys don't mind indulging me, I won't take up too much of your time. Please sit back and enjoy the Utasarabuna incident. This story comes from the year 1803 and is known as the Utasarabuna. The name Utasarabun basically means hollow boat. According to historical records, Japanese fishermen found a strange round vessel that washed up on shore. The craft was described as circular, with metal plates, glass windows, and a strange symbols, written on the side of it. Kind of like, I don't want to say hieroglyphics. It was just a language they didn't understand. Inside the craft was a woman with pale skin and unusual reddish hair. I mean, you got to remember, this is Japan. Most people don't have red hair. Very rare, I imagine. I guess an albino might? I don't know. I've never seen a Japanese albino person in real life. I wonder if that's a small subgroup that exists. Huh. I guess it would. Everybody can be albino. Anyways, I don't know. I digress. In any case, she was wearing clothes that no one recognized. She spoke a language no one understood. But perhaps strangest of all, she was holding a small box that she refused to let anyone touch. No one knew where she came from. No one knew what language she spoke. No one knew what the symbols inside the craft meant. No one knew anything. They were gosh darn flabbergasted. Flabbergasted, I tell you. The fishermen eventually decided they couldn't help her. So they put the woman back into the craft and pushed her back out to sea.
See ya.
And she was never seen again. Dun, dun, dun. All right, so this is on Disclosure Discussion for a few reasons. Obviously, a very fun idea would be that this is an alien or an extra-dimensional person, or maybe someone from Atlantis. All we know for sure is it was a woman who had very different characteristics than the people from that area or anyone in that general vicinity. I kind of like the, I mean, it's hard to think that maybe a Irish or Scottish or European person ended up in Japan. It happened, I'm sure. I'm not saying it's impossible, but I like the idea of it would be like an Atlantean. You know what I mean? Like a lost continent or a civilization, because the craft they described was strange to them. To us, maybe it's just a submarine, which brings up time traveler. Maybe it was a time traveler who went back in time, ended up in like, you know, ancient Japan. That could be. I'm just saying. So aliens, time traveler, foreigner. In any case, it seems like these fishermen did not help push her back out to sea, and she probably died. I don't want to be morbid, but let's be honest. That doesn't sound like something really... It doesn't seem like it worked out for her. Rough. So if you're about to tell me that this is a fantasy, this is just a story, this did not happen, Joe. Well, you know what? I'd call you an incorrect person. That's right. I would have the gall to write the line in the sand and say, cross it. Come on, cross it, man. Because you know what? This actually did happen, probably. Because according to many, many different documents from that time period, this actually was a thing. That's all I'm saying. We're really telling this story over 200 years later. So obviously a little bit of telephone probably happened. So maybe little things changed, but ultimately this is a real report. Now there are a lot of theories about what this was. Some people believe she was just a foreign woman, which makes sense with a shipwreck. I think that is the least fantastical version. You know, could be the case. Some people believe in folklore and legend. Maybe it was a yokai or some other kind of mystical god or creature. Some people believe it was a secret government story? That is a weird take. I did not ever read that before. Some people believe it was a secret government story. Like a conspiracy? Why? Why would they do that? Okay, that doesn't matter. And of course, some people believe that it even might have been an early UFO encounter because the craft was round and had windows, metal plates, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, which isn't something that we would normally see around that time period. Which honestly sounds more like a spaceship than a boat. It does, you know. It sounds like a little saucer. Maybe too on the nose for being an actual flying saucer. But hey, you never know. We will probably actually not know the answer. We as people, right? Unless we create a time machine. Oh my God. What if we do? What if we create a time machine to go back to see what this was? And it actually ended up being us who was the people who washed up on shore. Oh my God, maybe the whole science team doesn't live except one person who happens to be a redheaded person. Or maybe there was maybe she was the only one who went. I don't know. This is breaking my brain, guys. I think I figured it out. But the most interesting thing about this story and the strange craft and the unknown visitor and the mysterious symbols is the fact that hundreds of years later, we're still talking about it. So it's got to actually... There's got to be some truth to it. There's got to be a little bit of, could be reading too much into it. I think I got in my own head on this one, guys. But in any case, if people were seeing a strange craft 100 years ago, maybe this UFO mystery is a lot older than we think, which is always a thing. But I personally, as a representative of Earthling Entertainment, since Ryan isn't currently here, I'm going to say it's time travelers from our time, from like 10 years from now. There's a random... redheaded 10-year-old out there today who in 10 years is going back in time to see the answers of the universe. And in that case, I'm hoping she didn't die, because if the Japanese gentleman fisherman, it just says fisherman, could have been women, I don't know, put her back out into sea, oh boy, yeah, she's probably dead. Would you do it if it was a suicide mission? I don't know. You could travel through time. Presumably, you could have done other things before you ended in that situation where you're shipwrecked and you get cast away in Japan, right? So maybe you lived quite a bit of time. Maybe you had 2 years of traveling the universe as a time traveler, and you got to see dinosaurs or any ancient theology that you want to see proven real, whatever. You got to do all that stuff. You got to see if there was aliens building the pyramids, anything you want. But you knew ultimately you were going to end up shipwrecked and pushed out to sea by fishermen from Japan, and you would starve to death or die of thirst. Would you do it? I don't know. I don't know if I would do it. It would have to be like a lot of amazing things I knew for sure that I would see. But I guess that's the gamble, right? Like, you just secretly know that you're going to see and do a lot, but you don't know how long it's going to be, and you don't know what ratio of cool it'll be. I'm thinking too much into it. But guys, if you have an answer for me, if you would do that, if you would travel back in time knowing it was a suicide mission, I want to hear about it. Let me know at the Earthling Entertainment Podcast at gmail.com. That's Earthling Entertainment Podcast at gmail.com. Or you can hit us up on any of the social medias. We have Instagram, which I cover. I think Ryan does the TikTok, and obviously YouTube, anything. Hit us up. We could talk more about it. And with that, I'm going to invite Ryan back on the show so he could say goodbye to you, and we could wrap this whole thing up. Hope you enjoyed this week's Disclosure discussion. Oh, my God. So I made it, Ryan. I made it through the whole episode without you, and it was difficult. I want you to know that. It was a struggle. I need you to never get sick again.
I promise I will never get sick again.
Yes, absolutely.
No, but thanks for covering for me, bud. Sorry, everybody. I promise we'll get back on the normal schedule soon.
Well, to be fair, we are on the normal schedule. This episode, we're not missing a week, so you're fine there. But I have to be honest, it's easier to bounce off you when we don't have this weird delay. It kind of seems like I'm stepping over things you say a little bit more than I'd like.
I kind of felt the same way too a little bit, but hey, this is just the nature of the beast of Zoom and stuff like that. But hey, no, I'm glad we got to do this today. We love doing this show. I love doing the show every week, so it bummed me out that I was sick.
Oh, man, it's okay. But hey, we want to give you guys, we're going to leave you all with this message. Please, if you liked what you heard today, check out any other episode of Earthling Entertainment. Make sure to hit that download button. Downloading the episode is actually the best way to support the show. But if you're looking for another way, you're like, wow, I like these Earthling Entertainment guys. How can I see them in a bunch of random scenarios where they are visiting cryptids and haunted places? Well, you can do that as well. On Amazon, you can get the official Earthling Entertainment coloring book, if you so choose.
It's awesome, and all the proceeds just go right back into the podcast to help us out. And guys, like Joe said, you know, if you like this, you know, download the episode, but also share us with a friend, with a coworker. The more ears, the better.
That is right. So I think that's it, man. From all of us here at Earthling Entertainment,
see ya!
Goodbye.
Greetings, future foundlings. I am Quentin.
And I'm Emily, and we are the hosts of the Missing Role Player Found Actual Play podcast. We offer intense roleplay, fully edited, immersive audio that will place you alongside us in our grand adventures.
Like in SAO, The Antithesis of Darkness, our series where if you die in the game, you die in real life.
That's right, we kill our players.
It's a humble beginnings to high fantasy isekai adventure where average people become legendary heroes.
But if you're more interested in post-apocalyptic science fantasy drama where humanity has been thrust back into the Middle Ages, then help us search for relics of bygone civilizations.
Because we can't find them.
In the Gage Chronicles.
Together, our cast and crew, we are Missing Role Player Found, an immersive, narrative-driven, actual play podcast with a catalog of different shows and more on the way. That's Missing R-O-L-L Player Found. So pull up a chair and join us on a grand adventure.